Hello, this is Kinch Rendell with Your Business Podcast. Today's interview is with Brooke Chestnut. He is going to talk to us about millennials and how we integrate them, how we work with them, how we attract them. He has dedicated 30 years to successful sales leadership training, consulting, and mentoring programs for multiple industries in the Colorado area. He is an expert in guiding small and large organizations through the challenging generational issues that confront all companies today. He specializes in transforming millennials from being a liability into an engaged, productive employee. In today's workforce, the millennial factor has become the single most talked about challenge for any C-level executive. They wonder, how do we attract the best millennial talent? What processes need reviewing and why? How do we retain millennial employees? Those are some of the issues that keep executives awake at night, and for good reason. By 2025, 75% of the workforce will be occupied by the millennial generation.
Thank you, Kinch. It's great to be here.
Thanks. So tell me, what led you? Like, where did you start in life that now you're ending up with enough experience, once again, to help other people understand how to work in the workforce?
Well, I believe that I started off in a sales career, and I wasn't very good, Kinch. You know, like most people, you really have to struggle in learning your craft. And when I started out, I had very little confidence and was not a good communicator. But over the course of a couple of years, I was able to have a great mentor, and I started to become very successful in straight commission sales down the street, business to business. But over time, I noticed that if I could duplicate my efforts with others and teach others to be successful in this field, then I could create an even greater opportunity, not only for myself, but for the people I'd be leading, and also for the company that I was supporting.
Okay, and a couple of big keys right there that I hear, I've read a lot about. You got a mentor. Why do you think you even stuck with it, and how did you get to the mentor? Like, what if you're not good at something, so many people quit. What about you, or what about the opportunity kept you around?
I enjoyed the challenge because it was a very difficult business, and a mentor that I had back in my early years saw that I had some skills, but I needed to be polished. And so he kept me accountable for ongoing improvement. And the more I worked, the more I studied, the more I decided to be committed to this craft of communication, and also being able to use some of my intangibles, such as vocal variety and body language and eye contact, those types of things really helped me connect with strangers. And I started to realize, because of my mentor holding me to this task, I started to realize that I was becoming very influential and I was starting to win. And of course, that's a great feeling. And so because of that, I continued to improve those skills.
Okay, so maybe he reached out to you?
He did. He reached out to me and noticed that I was struggling. And so he gave me a couple of exercises and things to do, some books to read, some articles to review. Because at an early age, Kinch, like most people, I'm thinking, you know, I didn't read a lot. I just figured I could just go out and do it. And I decided that reading really helped open the doors to a lot of different things that I was not aware of.
Oh, yeah, all the experiences and mistakes you don't have to make. I mean, literally, I tried to read as little as possible in college, and then I invited myself to an Amway meeting. And the best thing about Amway was they had all these business books they recommended you read. And I had got two business degrees, and yet I read more because of Amway than I ever did in college. So somebody reached down to you, probably from an older generation. Is that something that we should be thinking about now, reaching down to millennials to be their mentor? Should we be taking that first step? And are there certain reasons why we may have to really make the first impression on them or reach out to them that many of them may or may not reach out to us as much as we might have thought?
I believe so. I believe our generation, and specifically my generation, which is the baby boomers, we are too quick to judge this younger generation of millennials. And I think that is a disservice to that generation, because as the data has supported a lot of my findings, that, you know, by the year 2025, 3 out of every 4 workers in this country are going to be from the millennial generation. So I think that we need to reach out to them. We need to mentor them, because they are hungry for information, and they're also hungry for skill sets that, being a millennial, they don't have, because they've been consumed with technology in the form of a smartphone or a device that they use for communication, and therefore they don't get some of the skills that they need to communicate face-to-face.
Yeah, and something you said we should probably highlight. The stat is by 2025, 75% of the workforce will be the millennial generation.
That is correct.
So that's where you tie into that people running companies, they are concerned. They need to know what you know, because they do have to work with millennials. They have to have the different generations work together. Can you touch on some of the different topics there that you help and that you've noticed and you've researched?
Yes, they have to tap into that generation, because of course the data supports that they're going to be running their companies in 10 years. However, I think it's important to note that companies need to help the millennials, or this younger generation. I guess they need to embrace them, and they need to include them. And the struggles that these corporations are having right now, right today, are the struggles of communication. And how come these millennials, all they want to do is talk on their phone? That's all they want to use, and they don't understand what a deadline is. And I can't get them to work hard. I can't get them to show up on time. They seem to be so relaxed, and so on and so forth. And I think it's because the millennials are just different, and we just need to understand how to communicate with them. And if we do that, I think the longevity of success for any corporation will be enhanced if they take the time to improve these skills.
And you touched on that they want to learn these skills. From what I can tell, being in between the generations, is they grew up with these phones and all these smart things, so the easiest way to communicate with their friends wasn't picking up and making a phone call. It's always texting and typing. So they're missing, as you said, you realize you had good skills, or your mentor helped you, of eye contact. I know that from seeing you. They don't have that, but you said they even want to learn that. Like, they realize they're missing that once they get out into the greater world, I take it.
They do. They are the most educated generation ever. They are tech savvy. They are entrepreneurial. They are visionary. They are creative. They are anxious. They are restless. And so one of their greatest fears is that they are going to join a company that they believe in, but for some reason they're not getting professional development from this company. And if they don't get it soon enough, they're going to leave. So the millennials, they all want to be successful in life. They all want to have pretty much everything that their parents did, but they also are just craving for the skill sets that they know that they are weak on. And of course, those are, as you just pointed out, some of the communication skills. So I think it's important for companies to realize that when you mentor millennials, you need to ask them a couple of questions. The first question is, how do you like to receive and give communication? And once you establish that, I think the doors open for opportunities to become trusted advisors over a longer period of time.
Okay. And are there
Could they specifically, if I'm looking to hire people, obviously we should touch on the for purpose versus just a job. They do want training. Do you go right out there and tell them, hey, we're going to help you learn how to be successful by communication styles at work? And do you even let the millennials know that, hey, to communicate with your parents' generation and other generations, here's what we can help you learn?
Absolutely. I think we would certainly start there as a place to help them with their careers. I think that they're asking for it. I just think that there's a lot of companies out there that aren't sure how to go about not only attracting this generation, but once you've attracted them, how do you retain them? What are some of the things that companies can do to retain this millennial generation? Because if you don't do certain things, they're going to leave. And when people leave companies, it costs them money. And I think if I was able to perhaps review a couple of these concepts, perhaps that might help some of our listeners in recruiting this younger, talented generation.
Oh, sure. Please give us some nuggets that will help people just to think about these concepts and realize, oh, wow, this is the best ways to work with them, as you said, to retain them.
Correct. So one of the concepts that is very, it's being studied now, and a lot of companies are trying it, but they're giving their younger workers more flexibility. And by flexibility, I mean they can work mobily. They get to work in different areas. They don't have to come into the office to work. They can work at home. They can work in their car. They can work at a Starbucks where they can socialize with friends. And giving them the ability to have this flexible time and freedom to do their work, as long as their work is good and is completed on time, then I think you're tapping into one of the things that millennials love, and that is to have this freedom and flexibility to be able to work mobily.
I think everybody loves that. Having not gone into an office for a good 8 years now, I can tell you I love that. I mean, a lot of the podcasts I've done, just when I'm doing it by myself, it's like, hey, you want to work for yourself. You don't want to go work for someone else. And literally, I've said so many times, Brooke, you could offer me $1 million a year to work for you and tell me to come to the Cube. And I might try it for a few weeks or a month, but I guarantee you very quickly I'd be like, I'm not doing this. I would even rather, if I knew I couldn't make money or very much money but have my freedom, I would move out to the smallest, cheapest place where I thought there'd be a good life for my family and I, and I would do that.
Right.
Because once you get some of that freedom, and I guess – I don't know how the millennials maybe have had more freedom, but maybe they've tasted so much of it now that it's such a shock not to have it.
Correct. And they have a lot of freedom, and they do like to be mobilized. They are a very social generation, so they're always connecting with their friends and their peers via their technology. And if you can take some of that and bring it into the workplace and into their job description, then I think you are tapping into something that is very valuable, not just for the short term, but for the long term. And I think there's another concept that some companies might need to think about. When we grew up, we watched our parents have a wonderful work-life balance. In other words, they balanced their work time and their home time very, very well. My mom was really good at that. I don't know about you, Kinch, but they really did a good job with balance. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and I've touched on this before, too. A lot of us, our mentors are our parents, whether we realize it or not, or finally later in life I realized it. A side tangent is I've got the same 2 degrees my parents got. Why? Because my parents got them. My mom was a consultant the whole time I was growing up. My first job was a consultant. She had the free time because she would only work 35 hours a week to come around to see me. So that's a very good point that they were much more balanced, at least by the time I was born, than my first job working 60 or 70 hours a week at times.
Correct. And so today, the millennials, they are not interested in just a work-life balance. You've got to remember that because they are so tech savvy and they are the most educated generation ever, what the millennials are looking for, not only in their life but in their careers, is a work-life blend. And a blend is way different than a balance.
Oh, good point, good point. So does this tie into like a for-purpose organization? They believe in the purpose the organization is achieving in addition to their mainline business?
That is more important to them than income. They have to have a purpose. And the other thing that helps them with that, as I alluded to earlier, is when I talk about a work-life blend, what I'm saying is that they can blend many different things at the same time and be effective and be productive. They are some of the best multitaskers ever.
Yeah, as much as I want to challenge that, like I'm taking Shailene Johnson's class and she goes, you can get so much done if you will just sit down and focus and have no distractions. But in reality, I know I didn't live their life because I didn't have my cell phone until after college. Whereas they've had all these bombardments. I was always pretty good at having multiple things going on. I still kind of think, okay, I can probably focus a little better with one. But it might be something we should just realize. We did not grow up anything like them. We didn't have all these things. Like you said, they can be most educated because at this point, whatever my kids ask me, I go on. I go, what does Las Vegas mean? I did this yesterday because Google or Bing will tell me the answer. So it makes sense that they can know so much because they always have all the answers there.
Correct. They do. And I think one of the best stories I can share is my daughter. Because as a business person, I'm very, very familiar with millennials, but I also need to let you know that I am a parent of two. Okay? And one of them is my daughter, Alexandra, who's 29, and my other daughter is Kelsey, who's 26. And my daughters will come home, especially my older one, and she'll start on the computer doing a report for work, and then her mother will call her into the kitchen to come help her bake cookies for about an hour. Okay? So she does that. Then her sister calls her downstairs because she wants to show her these really cool video games. So she sits down after being with mom downstairs to do video games with her sister for about another hour or so. And then she gets this posting on her Facebook page because she's got her phone, and she runs upstairs to a different computer and gets on Facebook and does all of this work with social media. And then after a couple hours of doing that, she goes right back to that other computer to finish the report for her job.
This is too funny. So since I've been reading so much lately and taking classes, I've read and heard over and over again that every 45 minutes or even every 25 minutes, you should get up and take a break. In reality, they're doing that. So if that works for all of us, it's working for them, yet we kind of think they're crazy for doing it because they're not focusing like at least we were probably made to focus in school, I would say.
Correct. So those are two things that I feel are important for companies to understand when they are trying to hire millennials, is that they offer a work-life blend and they also offer job flexibility.
And I would think everybody would want that once again. I read Tim Ferriss's book, The 4-Hour Workweek, long ago, and he starts hinting at, okay, you've got a full-time job, what are you going to do? Well, first you ask for a day off every other week where you're going to work from home. He goes, and you make sure you get more work done than you would otherwise. And he goes, you want to get to the point where you don't go to the office unless you have to. So in reality, I mean, I totally believe in that. Unless you're escaping something bad at home, I can't imagine. Like, I love to be at home, be able to walk out and see the chickens come back in or do whatever it is. So yeah. It makes sense even for me. And I'm the small generation. What am I called?
You are the Generation X. And Generation X are the people that were born between 1964 and 1979.
And we're the smallest, right?
You are by far the smallest population of generations on the planet.
You said something about in the workforce. What are we feeling like there?
Let's define the workforce just for a minute. There's four distinct generations in the world. The first one, of course, is the silent generation or the traditionalists, who were born before 1946, and most all of those people have retired or they're very close to retirement. So they're really not a factor for us. The next generation, which is has been by far the largest generation ever, are the baby boomers. And they were born between 1946 and 1964. I am a member of the baby boomers. And we are 80-plus million strong and have dominated the workforce and the generation populations for the last 30 to 40 years.
Wow, yeah. And that, and how many more years do you think they're going to be working and integrating with these next generations?
That's So what we're doing is define the generations, and those baby boomers, well, our portfolios got crushed in the Great Recession, and our children watched this happen. And as our portfolios got crushed, we had to go back into the workforce, maintain our education and our skill sets and all of our experience, and we are now climbing out of that. Since 2009, 2010, the last 5 years, the baby boomers have done quite well, and we're getting better. We're building up our retirement portfolios, which means we're not going to be retiring anytime soon.
Oh, yeah. Plus, I mean, just look at the amount of interest you can get, which is zeal, nil, nothing. Unless you invest in the stock market or something else, like I would say rentals or something housing-wise, you didn't get much. And you're scared to retire because you can't get much guaranteed.
That is correct. So now we go to the Gen Xers. And the Gen Xers, as I said, were born between 1964 and 1979, but they are by far the smallest group. However, right now they have mortgages, they have young families, and they want a promotion. They've earned the right for a promotion, and they've got the skills to prove it. But guess what? There's nowhere for them to go. Because
you guys are still there.
Baby boomers are not leaving. So the Gen Xers are kind of stuck. They're gonna be patient. They're going to continue to work hard, and they're going to get their opportunity, which we can share with you a little bit later. But behind those Gen Xers are the millennials. And those people were born between 1980 and the year 2000. And in May of this year, 2015, for the first time ever, the millennial generation has surpassed the baby boomers in population.
Oh, wow. So once again, another huge, you guys did a good job of producing more of you.
So the baby boomers, myself, we have millennial children, and now the most dominant generation, not only in this country, but on this planet, are the millennials. And they are coming on strong. And when you think about it, it isn't just about the millennials that are born and raised in the United States. We're talking about the millennial generations in China, India, Europe, Russia, South America, Mexico, Canada, Australia, from all over the world. You've got millennials now who are all coming to this country, and they are really going to be a strong generation to deal with, which is why I bring this to companies, corporations, saying you need to tap into this because they're the ones that are going to be running your companies in the future.
Well, once again, well, and if nothing else, they're going to be working at your company, so yes, kind of running it, and you always want to attract the best talent. So you better have a clue how to attract the best talent of the millennial, and as you said, keep them around.
Correct.
It makes total sense that a lot of people might just go, oh, we're not going to hire them, we're not going to hire them. Eventually you will want to, and probably the sooner the better, to get the best ones.
And have you noticed, in and around our great metropolitan city of Denver, everywhere I look, on stores, on buildings, on marquees, everybody's hiring. We're hiring managers. We're hiring assistant managers. We're hiring workforces. Why is everybody still hiring? I mean, this has been going on, you know, for a number of months, not just the holiday season. And one of the reasons why is they want to find the best talent.
So they're basically always hiring, trying to find the best.
Correct. They're always in an attraction and retention mode. We've got to find the best workers. So, and there are quite a few to pick from.
It's gonna be so interesting. Let's say obviously Starbucks has some feel good qualities, I would think, for purpose qualities. But if you are an owner of Subway stores, yeah, you need to tie something more in there if you think you're gonna keep these employees. I mean, I would think it'd work for anybody, but especially as you said, the millennials. The for purpose, besides just making $8 or $9 or $10 an hour, that doesn't retain very much.
That's right. That's absolutely right. So companies need to come up with a couple of different ideas to help retain and help attract these this younger generation. I've talked about a couple of them. There is another interesting concept that's kind of making its way through the workforce, and I'd like to share it with you, Kinch.
Oh, please do. Please do.
One of the greatest companies of our generation is known as General Electric. And years ago, General Electric had 16 layers of management. Today, they have 5. And what that means is that the corporate ladder has pretty much disappeared. It has collapsed. There is really no way at this point now for young workers to climb a corporate ladder, because the corporate ladder doesn't exist because the layers of management are gone.
And that I swear it ties back in one other. That's a small tidbit of tying into the middle class has been so gutted, it seems like, in the last decade, just because they're going to thin everything out. So continue. That just
correct. But if I'm a young worker, okay, I really like your company, but how do I move up? What are my goals? How do I climb the corporate ladder here at this particular company? And if the person says, well, we don't really have a corporate ladder because all of our layers of management have gone away. So how are you going to attract young, skilled talent if you don't have a ladder for them to climb?
Good question.
Exactly.
Tease us a little more. Give us the goods.
So instead of having a corporate ladder at your company, and it could be a small company, it could be a large company, any size company, what I'm suggesting is throw out the concept of a corporate ladder and install a corporate lattice.
Okay.
So what does that mean, bro? What do you mean by lattice?
Well, I can grow some vines of it, right?
Well, think about it. The corporate ladder was a very traditional hierarchy structure with top-down authority and perhaps limited access to information. And, career paths were always vertical.
Yep.
So if you think about the lattice is a flatter matrix structure, and where authority can be distributed, you have a broader information opportunity, but you have a multi-directional career path. So what that means is the new recruit could start off in, they're going to start off in the warehouse, learning distribution, and they're there for 3 or 4 months. Then they zigzag over here, where they're now going to be in a department called process and procedures or materials management. And they're going to spend 3 or 4 months there learning that department. Then they're going to zigzag over here to go to the accounting department to see what that's like. And then they're going to zip around over to here to do proposals for 4 or 5 months. And then they end up at the customer service department. And when you do this, you have what we call high workforce mobility, and the loyalty is based on the opportunity to learn all the different pieces of the company. And therefore, you are integrating more of your career and your life into the competencies that define your work.
Which makes sense anyway, because I could see you weeding out the people that don't like something, but also the ones that stick with it and that do rise up, they have touched everything, which will help them obviously manage the company or manage a part of that company because they've been in all the different pieces.
Correct. So a perfect example of this is the young accounting intern, okay? Went to school and They're all about numbers and all about counting, but because they joined the corporate lattice, they found that they are really good at materials management, and they want to work with spreadsheets and all this stuff in materials management, not so much accounting. And they can make that discovery if there's a lattice for them to work with.
Yeah, so if they have that opportunity, which I think it's so key. I think so many of people my age, for one, we're Generation X. I talk to so many friends that they're tired of what they're doing. And I'm wondering if there was more of a purpose built into what they were doing, like what we're advertising here for the millennials, if they'd be much happier because of that. So that's one just little piece, realizing, wow, if you let them have all these little different feeling points in the organization, they might also realize that what they got their degree in, if they got one, isn't what they really like, and it's okay. That's something I feel like so many people in my generation, we hit this 40 age-ish range, we have these kids in this family, and we're like, oh, wow, we're stuck. I've got this job, and like you said, the middle management tiers, a lot of them are gone.
Correct.
And those efficiencies or inefficiencies have been cut out. So a lot of what you're saying kind of makes sense, like, well, we maybe should have done this all along. I mean, I truly believe with the work from home, have flexibility. I mean, just to make it easier if you have kids at home to have more time with them and make it easier on your partner. So I like everything you're saying. I even love the idea of – I swear there's been several CEOs who have started down in the mailroom or somewhere else and worked their ways up.
That's right. And so now I think it's important that people understand that the workforce is changing, and it's changing dramatically. It's no longer business as usual and do things the way we've always done them. Companies are going to have to become nimble. They're going to have to become creative, and they're definitely going to have to be extremely vigilant in attracting some of the best talent to their organizations.
And I'm wondering if some of these bigger companies, obviously the bigger you are, the more money you have to do research and development or kick off and spin off other companies, but people like Google and such, I can imagine if I want to go get a job there, I'm a millennial, you can tell me which companies are maybe doing the best right now. But if I'm at Google and I have some idea, I bet they have knocked out a lot of the, once again, hierarchy to be able to get my idea pushed up to say, hey, can we start doing this? Where that would really attract even me to go, I don't have to do the same thing for the next 5 years. If I come up with a great idea, they might let me spin off with a group and do that. Is that something that you've heard about, and are there certain companies that are really doing better or worse at this?
I think that companies that focus on three things, the data has supported that we talked about one, which is flexibility. The other thing is having creativity at your office, at your work. And what that means is that your senior level leadership is going to be listening to the ideas and perhaps some different concepts from these younger workers and giving them an opportunity to try it. Give them an opportunity to do what they think they will work, and if it works, okay, great. But if it doesn't, they've risked something and they've learned something, and they'll probably learn a lot more from that failure.
And
it's huge.
Okay.
The last piece is having a collaborative workforce. We touched on it earlier. They want to have purpose, but these younger generations, they like to collaborate with their groups, and they like to have different ideas, and they like to be accountable as a team. They want to work together versus working in a competitive industry.
Yeah, so I would say in that regard, it may be competitive in the business world, so you might have to reframe or rephrase to realize, yeah, as a team, can you build upon this idea? Can you – I mean, I get that because – as James Altucher wrote a lot of his books recently, he says it's now the idea economy. It's all about ideas, and then even says idea sex. And idea sex is easier if you have more people sharing ideas and hearing the ideas. So I could definitely check a box there saying, yeah, teamwork in that regard is great. And I can tell you, working with people in between or right in the younger part of my generation, I've worked with several younger like developers doing programming. And I realized some people would just not ask for help. And it's amazing how quickly things can get solved if you have the habit of asking or searching early. But I even find just asking, are they much better at asking for help with teammates because they're so used to the team group and collaboration?
You know, I think the younger generation has a more difficult time asking for help.
Between themselves or between generations or all of it?
I think between generations. Between themselves are more comfortable. Because you know what they'll do? They'll text each other. Okay?
Yep.
But if I'm going to go and talk to the CFO and I'm a new accounting intern, that is going to be a very difficult conversation for a younger millennial. Because
so they should open that up to emailing and texting probably as the first line of communication or an easy way for them to share ideas?
That is exactly correct. So the first greatest fear of a millennial was what? Not getting professional development from their employer. The second greatest pet peeve of a millennial is not having enough feedback. Do you know what I mean by that?
That's amazing. It seemed like they wouldn't want the feedback, but in reality they want it, but maybe the way we deliver it.
My daughters will send me pictures to my phone. And I get the pictures and they're really fun. And, oh, that's great, that's great. But I put the phone away.
You didn't close the loop. You didn't reply.
And 40 seconds later, I get a phone call from my daughter. Dad, did you get the pictures? I go, well, yeah. Well, then why didn't you text me back? Why didn't you tell me you got the pictures, Dad? They want acknowledgement. They want to know, and they want to know now.
And they expect a response.
They want a response. So if you're in the workforce and you're a young, talented worker and you turn in your first project to your manager or to your director and they say thank you and then we'll review all of this at your 90-day review, do you think that talented millennial is going to stick around and wait 90 days for a review?
Oh, wow. So let me just this is eye-opening for me. So I've got a virtual assistant now, and I believe he's a millennial, and I'm working with different websites like Fiverr and Freelancer to have different drawings done for a book and just different random projects.
Right.
And I'm now realizing I don't get right back to people. I've got so many things going on that, okay, if I submitted this and you give me back the pictures, I'll look at them in 2 or 3 days. And yet the one lady recently this past week said, I am fearful this project isn't going well. I'm thinking, no, it's great, it's fine, but it's probably because I'm not instantly giving any feedback at all. And I just did that again. She sent things I couldn't open 2 days ago, and I started to reply, and I haven't replied to say I can't open these. I don't have that program. So this is important for not only business but everywhere. And I guess this relates back to they've grown up with Facebook and text messaging, and they always get some kind of instant feedback.
So my suggestion for companies is to become a continuous feedback organization. And what that means is you keep all of your reviews that you've got during a course of a year, but in between there, when someone turns something in, whatever it is, all you need to do is send them a quick snippet of acknowledgement. No praise, no critique, just acknowledge. Hey, got the report, looks fine, we'll talk later. That's all you got to do. And you text them or a short email or whatever. And that millennial will say, oh my gosh, I got a text from my boss. He got my report. I'm being noticed, I'm being valued, my work has purpose, and all that director did was give him a little text. A little acknowledgement. And that's called becoming a continuous feedback organization. And when that happens, you start to develop trust. And they start to understand that, wow, my work does matter. And guess what they're going to do? They're going to text, and they're going to Facebook, and they're going to Snapchat and Instagram all of their friends that they are now working in a company that uses continuous feedback.
Yeah, they'll be happy, and obviously they'll share that. And something else you keep touching on, the text versus email. I literally, the James Altucher guy, he has two daughters that are teenagers, and he said they don't even do email. It's all text messaging.
Right.
And he realized, he goes, I barely do email because there's so much just junk in there.
Right.
So it's interesting how we're going there. Some of the new systems like our Salesforce that's been out probably for a decade now, they have the ability to send emails back and forth, reply to an email, and it goes into the database. I work with some people that literally systems send text messages. It might become more and more important for us to have our systems that help run our business do that. Because I don't know how many CEOs are going to want to text their employees and not have a record of it. I could see maybe some challenges there. Whereas if a system does it, you send back a reply and it goes to the text message and an email, that might be something that seems so simple and to me maybe not so important.
Uh-huh.
But for these millennials, it might really kind of help close the loop and tie the loop in, because once again, it could be 9 o'clock at night. You send that out. They may not check their email, but they get that text.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, they got their phone right next to them. So I just feel like if this concept makes sense, how much different a millennial is going to view your company, because your company is a you know, continuous feedback company. Versus other companies that are not.
Yeah. And just even knowing that, I mean, I'm sitting there critiquing myself going, wow, these people keep submitting things. And sometimes I wait 3 or 4 days or a week to go, oh, yeah, thanks. That looked great. And that's, I know I'm kind of scatterbrained. And I think people assume that, oh, this is the most important thing I'm doing. It's like, no, it's one of about 10 or 20 things I'm doing. I'm just trying to keep the ball moving on all of them. So I come back and touch each one and go, great, let me move this to the next step. Oh, so you said three things: creativity, collaboration, and what else? What's the third? Did I miss it?
There is one other concept that I feel is so important today, and it relates back to what we talked about a little bit earlier, and it's about mentorship. And I gave a seminar workshop, and I asked the crowd of about 75 people, I said, so how many of you, and they're all, you know, they're all baby boomers, pretty much, Gen Xers. How many of you have a mentorship program in your company? Out of 75 people, 4 people raised their hands.
Wow.
Now, that to me is a very distressing signal, because if you have all these baby boomers that are perhaps 5 to 10 years away from retirement, and you don't have a program in place to help transfer all of that corporate knowledge from them, your senior level workers, to a newer generation or interns or the younger workers, and they retire before that knowledge is transitioned, the CEO of that company is in big trouble.
Good points. Good points. And that's – so now that I'm – in my 40s, I finally realized, like, oh, yeah, mentors. I keep hearing in all these classes and books I'm reading about mentors and accountability partners. It finally dawned on me that the baby boomers are retiring. And it's so easy to say, hey, would you like to grab lunch? And at least once a month, I do that with several different people now. And I'm trying to expand that more and more. I mean, even from Toastmasters, I always talk so great about Toastmasters, meeting all the different ages of people. But I've realized a lot of these people will hang out afterwards and talk to you for an hour or two. And
yeah.
As you're saying, this should be happening not only out in public, but in the company, because the knowledge, you need to pass it along. Because as usual, if you don't know why somebody made a mistake or that they ever made one, you'll probably make it again.
Correct. So in my class, I say, okay, obviously we know the importance of a mentorship program, correct? We're going to pair your level worker with a younger intern so that over time, the course of the year or whatever the program states, the corporate knowledge is going to be transitioned over time to that younger worker. That makes total sense, correct?
Yeah.
Well, the things that they're going to learn, of course, they're going to learn about process, they're going to learn about ethics, they're going to learn about culture, and that's all important. But what happens over time, and this is what the data is telling me, because I've been studying this now for the last 2.5 years, is that the millennials, the younger generation, they start to get bored because this mentorship is going in one direction and one direction only, from the senior level to the newer guy. And, you know, at some point, these younger people are just going, oh, man, I got to sit through another thing with my mentorship program, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, in other words, it starts to get stale over time. And
they probably feel like you're just telling them stuff they may halfway already know or partially know, but it probably seems so antiquated.
Correct. So over time, if that happens, you perhaps, with all the effort you put into this mentorship program, you might be losing some of your talented workers after spending some time there, which would be dreadful. You don't want that to happen. So what I'm going to suggest is that the company comes up with what we call a reverse mentorship program or dual mentorship program.
And wait, say that again? Reverse? I didn't catch that second one.
Reverse mentorship program or a dual mentorship program.
Okay, dual.
What that means is the younger intern that's hired is now partnered with a senior level worker, and that younger millennial now is going to be mentoring that older baby boomer on things like social media, Facebook,
Snapchat,
Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter. That younger millennial is an expert in all of those things and can now mentor an older worker to become more relevant in these social media platforms and maybe even teach him how to communicate in text with his grandchildren.
And what's interesting there also, let's say I'm used to smaller businesses. I've mainly worked in smaller ones. My virtual assistant is doing a lot of stuff on Instagram for a couple of my sites.
You bring,
I bet anybody that is a smaller company that hires a millennial or has kids, you could have somebody like that making the posts for your company, doing the 5 to 8 that I'd recommend every day of information going out. For me, it's usually positive quotes or pictures of something on a farm. They can literally also bring in, once again, and be reverse mentoring or helping and teaching, and they like to do that.
Exactly. And so what you've done now is you have created a program within your organization that has communication and mentorship going in both directions. And that should
help evolve, right? I mean, to stay with the times at all. Think about Walmart. Had they had some employees go, oh, I like this Amazon thing, we should do that. Had they jumped on board right away, there probably would be no Amazon.
Exactly. So the reason I bring this up is because some of the biggest challenges in the workforce today are deal with communication. And if you give younger workers who are tired and you give them an opportunity to show their value to a senior level worker and vice versa, and they're going back and forth, what happens is you now have developed a lot of trust. And then when these younger workers and older workers show up at the conference table, guess what? We have better trust, we have more communication, more creativity, better ideas, action items are taken, and the productivity of the company is just unbelievable.
And once these millennials feel understood, they're probably much more loyal. That's got to tie back into, hey, they communicate the way I like to communicate. They're listening to some of the stuff we're doing that's important because in the future, they're going to be running it.
Well, yeah, and they're very loyal. They're very loyal. So if you give them an opportunity, as in this reverse mentorship program, that type of opportunity, I think, will be extremely valuable to them. And I think that's one of the good ways to retain this talented group.
I want to touch on something that I think has probably changed. Whenever I first came out of college, late 90s, right before 2000, we would go and learn by sitting in a class or going and taking classes. And now I hear everything is video, 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 make videos, make them 3 to 5 minutes long. Would you recommend me for the millennials that's so important? And also, would they probably rather watch a video of, if I'm their mentor, showing them something, either a screen share, or recording it, talking about it, than having to sit there face-to-face with me all the time?
Without question. They want to see video. They love video. They want to have things kind of be a game. You know what? I want to have interest in this because it's kind of like a puzzle, and they want to play it. They want to be social about it versus sitting down and having a one, like you just said, a face-to-face meeting. They would much prefer that type of I'm sure everyone's different, but you need to ask them, how do you want to learn? What's your most preferred way for communication? How should I email you? Should I leave you a voicemail? Or should I text you? Well, I think we know the answer to that. But I don't know about you, Kinch, But when I got my smartphone, I'm calling my kids all the time, leaving voicemail. And I would never hear from them, ever.
Let me admit, yesterday, I'm looking through my voicemails because it says 100% full on my iPhone. And I scroll back to the end of October, and I'm like, I don't recognize this phone number. I listen to it. Somehow, someone from my business ended up on my voicemail. And I thought, you know, we probably contacted this person because we have a system where we get an email every time a phone call comes in. We get the recording there too, though, if they leave a voicemail to that system. I'm like, we probably called them back. But you know what? I'm going to go ahead and call them back anyway. I called back. I left a message. I said, sorry, somehow this got to my voicemail. And this is Kench at Riptide Hosting. I said, just sorry. We try to call everybody back. So I did that knowing that most likely we called them back. But I'm actually the same way. I used to not even have a voicemail set up because I knew the chances of me checking that instead of just responding were huge. So I guess I'm kind of blending some of these ideas because I'm bad about that.
Yeah. Well, the story that I was going to continue to tell you was, you know, my nephew, I end up at my holiday party. My nephew, he's 12, says, Uncle Brooke, do you know how to text? And I go, not really. So he shows me how to text. I start texting my girls, and whammo, I get instant connection.
That's what they're used to. That's what they and they're almost 30. Wow.
Yeah, they're almost 30. So they're 29, 26. But it's just being able to understand how they want to communicate. How do you want to give and to receive your communication? And I think as a recruiter or an HR director in any company, that has to be a significant question on the interview.
Well, also, once again, I come back to, since my career has been software development a lot, I see it now necessary, since all this texting is going on, to have your systems, your applications, send out the text messages so you can track some of this. The people higher up are probably wanting to control and see what's going on. I mean, you were in sales. Did somebody track all your stuff at this point? I bet somebody would like to track, oh, really? You texted who? How much? What did you text them?
Right.
I'm just seeing an opportunity there for some of that you literally want to text most people probably that are younger. They will probably respond quicker.
Exactly. So, again, that goes back to, you know, companies looking at using texting as a way to be a continuous feedback organization. And because of the younger workers, they're going to prefer to be acknowledged that way.
And that's what they're paying attention to.
Right. And I don't know what the legal ramifications are, but, you know, I see HR directors, you know, shaking their head at me going, well, you know, we're not going to be able to do that. And I said, well, find a way to do something different so that you can retain this wonderful, talented group. And they are going to like that.
Yeah, they would almost have to. Well, if nothing else, they get the leg up. They're like, hey, these people actually are willing to text me instead of sending me an email, so I'm going to go log in over there and check this.
Right, right.
It sounds like the younger you are, the less likely you are to deal with email and all the spam associated with it. Somehow, with the cell phone, I guess, yeah, you just go, hey, don't accept from this number anymore. Bam. You're not going to get any more spam from that number.
Correct. So kind of, you know, in review here, some of the things that I've discussed with you today are a mentorship program in conjunction with a reverse mentorship program. Also, work flexibility, the flexibility of being able to do work mobily. And then also, what was the third one that we talked about?
Oh, creativity, collaboration, mentorship.
Collaboration, the mentorship. And then also the corporate lattice versus the corporate ladder.
Oh, yeah. I'm drawing a lattice because I realize I remember things better if I picture a lattice in my head and or draw it.
Right.
No, that's all great information. So what do you – how do people contact you? I'll put it in the show notes. What is your preferred method, and have you blended that now knowing what the younger generations, your kids like?
Well, if someone wants to contact me, the best way to contact me, of course, is either by phone or by email. And I don't know if you've got my contact information there.
It will be in the show notes. But whether I have what you want exactly right now or not, that's a great thing about the podcast. We will upload it and have it there so people can contact you.
And so, so now I'm on the speaking circuit and doing keynotes, but more importantly, I'm doing workshops and seminars, and helping companies kind of learn some of these concepts or introduce some of these concepts to them so that they can think about it. And then they ask some really good questions. And the next step that I take is I interview them and their company and customize a program, workshop program, for their specific industry to help integrate all of these concepts so that they now can attract and retain this millennial talent that is pretty much invading this country.
It's going to happen whether you like it or not.
And that is a powerful statement right there, because so many people, when I tell them what I do and where my expertise is, they look at me, and they're my age, they look at me and they roll their eyes back into their head. And they think, oh, God, is that what you do? Because I tell you, everybody seems to have a story or something that's happened at work in terms of this miscommunication with the different generations. And so because of that, I feel it's important for my message to get out there, but also I want to help educate my generation, the Gen Xers, and, of course, these younger millennials.
Yeah, and I've heard Brooke speak several times. He is a great presenter. You can hear, hopefully you can hear the passion. You can definitely see it, feel it, and hear it when he's live in person. I mean, you've been in Toastmasters for how long now?
I have been in Toastmasters for a year and a half.
So that's how long I've known you and been around you and heard you speak. So I definitely recommend hearing him more, exploring these ideas, because they're coming. They're happening. And I want to spell out your email address and your name. It's Brooke, B-R-O-O-K-E, at brookchestnut.com. That's B-R-O-O-K-E-C-H-E-S-N-U-T.com. And if you'd like, you can give out your phone number.
And my phone number, the best number to reach me at anytime, is 719-425-5099.
Thank you. Go ahead.
You can also go to Brooke Chestnut, spelled C-H-E-S-N-U-T.com, to my website, where you'll see all of the content and programs I do, plus video from doing speaking engagements, as well as from different companies who have hired me and give me testimonials.
And that's where video, once again, I've got to just highlight something I heard at the conference I went to a couple months ago. The stat was something like, if you had a video on a landing page on your website where you were selling something, if you had a video there, you were a 68% better chance of selling something. Your sales went up 68%.
Wow.
And from everything I'm learning and heard you speak in the past and now, with millennials, that's going to increase more and more, because it sounds like they'd much rather watch a video than read something.
That's true.
Like, they will latch on to that. Here's something random. One of my productivity tips I do for myself is, my phone does not make a bing, a noise, a light up, nothing for emails or text messages. Do you think any millennials do that?
You know, I don't know, but I think it's pretty clear that when you see the millennials, no matter where they are, that phone is pretty close to them.
Oh, yeah.
Either in their hand, in their pocket. You know, yesterday, I'm sitting at the stoplight, and two millennial girls are walking across this huge, busy intersection, not looking anywhere except at their phones texting as they're walking across huge, busy intersection. Totally oblivious. The traffic, noise, everything. They are so dialed into that phone and texting. It's amazing to me.
Things are so addictive. Ty Lopez recently said on a podcast I heard that music is one of the most addictive things out there. Well, phones I know are addictive. I bet there's a study. The younger you are, the closer that phone is to you more of the day. My wife, a day or two ago, was like, can you just put it down for the next hour and not check it at all? So I understand that. It's close to me. Of course, my excuse always has been, well, I'm always on call for my small business. So if the phone rings at 2 in the morning, I need to hear it.
Right.
And what's interesting is the millennials probably are so addicted to it just because they want to have the interaction with their friends and know what's going on in the latest post on Facebook or something.
Well, of course. And so I guess my point is that this phone, this smartphone, is not going away. It is only going to get better, more sophisticated. And so we just need to understand it and how this talented group of people want to use it. And
they're going to be the ones that evolve it, right? I mean, they're going to make it the tricorder that does. Of course, the tricorder didn't do as much as our current phone does.
Correct. So I think that's important that, you know, so many people that I talk to my age just complain and complain about, God, they're always on the phone. They're always on the phone. Well, guess what? They're going to continue to be on the phone. Regardless.
Yeah, we're a social creature, and they're just very social that way.
Exactly. And so it's just you have to understand it. And I think a story I got from a very, very successful chief financial officer at a corporation, they had hired some new intern in accounting, and his report was going to be due on profit and loss statements, whatever, and he needed a number from the CFO, but he didn't know how to talk to the CFO, so he texted him. And the CFO calls the HR director and says, "What is this?" And they had to sit down and, you know, kind of have some agreements here about how they were going to communicate going forward. And it was a perfect example of what's happening now in the workforce, because that young intern did not have the skill sets to walk into that CFO's office and ask the question face to face.
Yeah, they're just not used to that. They probably have brought their parents around. So anybody that doesn't have kids that's working with millennials probably is even in more of a shocking state.
Yes.
Because they haven't been acclimated at all to realize, wow, they expect even their parents that might be your age to do this.
Correct.
And if you don't have kids or interactions, you're not getting it. And then one thing I come back to, the sensitivity, is text messaging secure? What are they sending in text messages? I can imagine some CFOs getting really excited not knowing.
Oh, yeah. And, you know,
Brooke, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that I ask the crowd when I do my speaking, I say, all right, so how many of you baby boomers use Instagram and Snapchat? Less than 3% will acknowledge, you know? It's just something that we don't do, you know?
And that's where Instagram, you should break it up next time. Once they do that, say, how many are Instagram? Keep your hands up. And then how many are – because I've never used Snapchat. And Instagram – that was brought to me through, I'm blanking her name right now, at Toastmaster. She's talked about some of these a year or two ago. And then going to different conferences saying advertising is so key through Pinterest and Instagram.
Yeah.
That these – and think it's become more and more because the millennials pay attention more and more. But it slowly has infiltrated up more and more to the – I guess older you get, the more you pay attention to it. But it's basically what they're paying attention to, and all the ads can show up in there now, and they can follow you. And if you have posts every day, they feel like they're probably part of you.
Well, one of the questions that I get so often is, well, why do we need to pay attention to these millennials? I mean, are they really worthy of our attention? And then I give them a piece of data that I will share with you, Kish, if you would like to know.
I would like to know.
But they impact our society. In the year 2010, okay, that's 5 years ago, the three companies that I'm going to mention here didn't even exist, okay? They didn't exist 5 years ago. Today, these three companies represent $63 billion in revenue, and they have been solely driven by the millennial generation. Do you know what companies I'm talking about?
I don't want to guess, so that might not be proven. I don't know. Go for it.
The companies that I'm talking about, we've just spoke of, and one of them is Instagram. And if you remember, Instagram was purchased by Facebook in 2010 for $1 billion. Today, Instagram is worth $38 billion. Almost 40% of Facebook's revenue is from Instagram.
Wow, and they just started monetizing that not that long ago.
Yeah, so that's 2010. The second company is Uber. They revolutionize transportation. They don't own any cars. They just connect technology with need. And the third thing that I'm going to tell you about is Airbnb. They don't own any properties. They just connect people that have vacation requests for housing with technology. So all three of those companies became successful because of the phone, which goes back to your point. If you can get your marketing, your advertising, anything, an app on a phone, you're going to join the ranks of the very successful companies.
Yeah, especially as the millennials who are still quite young, they're going to keep making more and more money, most likely, and be a larger and larger percentage of the people buying everything.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you betcha. So I just felt that was an interesting statistic that these companies, in the matter of 5 years, have become overnight multi-billion-dollar organizations because of the generation of millennials and because of the technology of the smartphone.
Yeah. I'd like to touch on some things about you personally now. So you were just at Pikes Peak. Why is that? Why would you go to Pikes Peak? What is it about mountains?
Well, in 1985, I climbed my very first 14er, and I was hooked here in Colorado. And so since then, I've climbed all of the 55 14ers in the state. And Pikes Peak, of course, is one of them, and it's one of the closest ones to Denver that we can train on. And the reason we train on Pikes Peak is that now I'm on the quest to climb the seven summits of the world. And that, and basically what that means is climbing the highest peak on every continent on the planet.
And how many of those have you already done?
I have done four, and I am headed in 2 weeks to the continent of Antarctica to climb Mount Vincent, the highest peak on Antarctica.
And where is Santa Claus at?
Santa Claus is at the other pole.
Ah, you see, you didn't schedule it quite right there.
He's at the North Pole. We're going to the South Pole. So I've had this passion for expedition mountaineering and, you know, doing climbs like on Denali and Aconcagua, Kilimanjaro, Elbrus, and now Vincent. It's pretty compelling. The people that you work with, the teams that you have to coordinate with, and then you have to handle the elements, the weather, the danger of doing this. And I find it to be extremely exhilarating. Love it.
I'm wondering why. Is it the focus you have to have? I read the famous book about the expedition where several people died, I believe. Is it that you have to be so focused and so trained? And
You do. You have to be well-trained, which is why we go to Pikes Peak and we take 60-pound packs and climb up 10 miles to stay overnight at about 12,000 feet and, you know, be part of the elements. And the training is impeccable. But once you are on the climb with a group of people that some of them you don't know, you know, you have to function as a team because you're never going to summit by yourself. You have to summit as a team. And it becomes extremely difficult because sometimes people aren't ready to go and they can't make it. And we've been around some folks that never came back. And that's a tough deal.
Yeah, and that's where I can't believe I'm blanking on the name of the book, but literally that some people showed up there to do this and had never put on their climbing shoes, the boots, and what have you.
Correct. Or you get quite a few wealthy people that have time and money, and they feel they can buy a seat to the top of Mount Everest.
Yep.
And that's when bad things happen.
Yeah, that sounds like you've got to, obviously, they said so many people make it up so far, and they check the weather and say, sorry, we can't do it. We're going back. It's not a day or days that we can dare attempt that.
Right. So mountain climbing has given me an opportunity for leadership, for communication, for taking stories, and from those stories on the mountain, I bring them back to the business, because at the end of the day, you know, we can make business decisions and we can still be fine, but when you don't make a good decision at 14 or 17 or 19,000 feet, there are definitely some raw percussions that are going to happen.
Yeah, life or death, or losing limbs, or losing fingers. I mean, it was an amazing read. Maybe it was called Everest. I forget which one it was, but wow.
Yeah.
It's just, I think I did, Holy Cross might be the only 14er I did here. And no clue how far and how long, because I think that one, you go up and down and up and down or something. It's like a double where you get to the top part.
It is. And so now I'm going back and I'm doing a lot of the 14ers in the winter.
Oh, to train for the higher ones that will be frozen at all times of the year?
Correct. Yep.
Okay.
So
If I feel like I'm in shape sometime and you do an easy one, maybe I can join for a good workout.
Love to have you join me. There's lots to do here. But yeah, that's a big part of my life. I've been doing it now ever since I moved here in the late 70s. And so traveling the world and climbing these peaks and meeting all these people has really been a treat. And going to Antarctica is going to be quite an adventure, no doubt about that.
Yeah, there's not many people there otherwise, from what I understand, except for some experiments.
There's about 1,100 people total on probably one of the largest land masses on the planet.
Why even there's that many? Do some people actually live there?
Yeah, there's two research stations, one at the South Pole and then another one that's closer to a glacier. I can't remember the name of it. But other than that, there's nothing there.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they land this plane on the ice, and you get off the plane, and boom, you are in a tent on the ice for the next 3 weeks.
Oh, wow. And that's where, so a millennial would know, okay, you're going to take photos, and you're going to post all those things and put some positive sayings on Instagram.
Well, you are correct. I am taking a journal, and I am taking my smartphone. I don't have any connection, of course, but I will be doing short little videos. Because I'm expecting some serious adversarial conditions. And I'm going to bring back pictures and stories, of course, to share with my friends at Toastmasters, as well as with my audiences during my talks.
Yeah, and that's the thing with these videos. That's where literally with Periscope. So Twitter owns Periscope, and you can be live broadcasting anybody, anywhere, anytime. I did that after one of these good snowstorms over here, and people from all across the world were posting, so pretty, thank you for doing it.
Oh,
and from what
awesome.
I can tell, most of the people are younger that are doing this. They'll be driving in their car and start recording. But then there are people like Shailene Johnson and other people that realize to connect to these audiences, start doing it. So how many of these larger businesses that have millennials sitting there doing it for themselves could be taking advantage of that for their brand?
Exactly.
That's where – embracing, saying, hey, what are you guys into? What's going on? Explain Snapchat to us. Would you please do that? Either record a video of yourself or present in front of us. Probably giving them those options is a huge advantage so that they will maybe slowly start embracing the other styles once they're more comfy.
And they will. They'll learn. They're very good learners. And they will be changing, just like they changed those companies in 5 years. They are going to change the face of our workforce.
Yeah, it's got to happen. So it's like those who are embracing and learning and taking advantage of what you have to offer. So one thing I'd forgotten to ask, but a good thing to on the wrap up is, what do you recommend people read? Like, what are you reading? Are there blogs, their websites, their books? Where do you go to learn more about this whole arena of ideas?
Well, there's a very good book that has just come out by Professor Jean Teng. T-E-N-G-E is her name, and it's called Generation Me. And she has collected data, interviews, all kinds of information from 11 million different sources. And she writes just an amazing account of what the generation is like, the millennials, what they want, and how you and I and the rest of us can tap into that. Fabulous book.
And even you're saying that makes me realize anybody that's asking them what they want, what they expect, is going to have a leg up.
Yeah. There's also some great articles in Business Finance magazine. A guy named Jeff Schwartz wrote an article back in 2011. So this is 4 years old, and it's talking about the shift from the corporate ladder to the corporate lattice. And today,
okay,
in my data, there's only one company that has really made this shift and is successful with it, and that company is known as Cisco.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
No, I'm very familiar with them. We've paid them money for hardware for web hosting, so that's interesting. I would also, I've got a friend who still works there, so it'd be interesting to chat with them and see, hey,
yeah,
you're embracing this stuff, and that might be, even if you're an investor, you go, oh, I should probably embrace a company like that. They will probably be more forward-thinking,
right,
by embracing it.
And so I've got, if people would like me to send them, I've got, 15 to 25 different sources that I've been studying, reading, and collecting all of this
data.
Do
you have that set up as a freemium where they put in their email address and they get it?
Yes. If they just send me their email, I will forward that to them.
All right. And that's where I'm going to encourage you to put that on your website as a link, like, oh, fill out your information here, and the website will send it right to you. You know, millennials expect crazy stuff like that.
Yeah, and there'll be a lot of different sources to pick from.
Good
but
stuff.
I think I spoke last Tuesday night, and I like speaking to large groups because I ask everybody in the crowd, what generation are you in? And it is always so fabulous when I get representation from three and sometimes four different generations. And when I ask questions about to one generation, the answer is quite different than what another generation would give. And we get some great dialogue, but this young man from Russia, Tamir, was fascinated with all the data about millennials. And he agrees that his country has quite a few millennials who are very gifted, and they're coming to the United States. And I tell you what, those are the people that you want to tap into.
Oh, sure, yeah, because eventually they're going to be there anyway. You being able to attract and retain the best ones, that's what I say, hire the best you can. Hire,
right.
hire.
Correct.
Well, I think you have a wealth of information. I hope a lot of people tie into you. And start thinking, just realizing, wow, this is going to happen. And these are the best ways to work with them. So I appreciate all the time, all the information. If people have more questions, they can let you know. Let me know, and we will definitely fill out anything else they can or give them any more knowledge that you have.
Thanks so much, Kench. I really enjoyed speaking with you today.
Yes, I look forward to hearing about the adventures to Antarctica. I hope Santa still makes it down there for you.
Thanks, Kench. Appreciate it.
Brooke, it's been great.
I hope you enjoyed this interview. I hope you're now thinking, wow, how do I interact with people? How am I interacting with the different generations? What can I teach them and what can they teach me? Please leave us a review via iTunes. Let us know if you like it. Let us know if you have any questions once again. Contact me or contact Brooke directly. I appreciate you listening.